This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Melissa Idris. The trading week ahead is set to be chaotic. That's according to Stephen Innes, head of trading in Asia Pacific for Wanda. Now he joins us on the line from Singapore. Thank you so much for being with us this morning, Stephen. I want to begin with that very tense meeting out there in Canada, the G7 summit. And also the current summit that's being held where you are, down in Singapore, the Trump-Kim summit. Are markets kind of waiting and to see what transpires from all this? Or have they taken a position already considering the decisions or statements being made?
You know, it's such a huge week that a lot of traders have pared back a lot of risk going into this week. You know, I don't think the G7 was in any way a major factor of influence. I think what's really key in the overall perspective is this Trump-Kim summit. This is just a huge, massive event, and has such far-reaching regional implications that everybody is just sort of walking a tightrope here. And I also think we've got both the Federal Reserve Board and the ECB coming out this week. You know, it's just adding to this this luster. You know, this, and it is fantastic week for trading. I mean, it's going to be very active. It's probably going to be one of the busiest weeks. Well, we're expecting it to be one of the busiest weeks this year. But if we've seen so often in the past, when we build up our expectations too high, things usually end up a little bit flat. Right now, we're going through what I'm referring to, the calm before the chaos, or maybe more likely the fear of the unknown. But it should be quite interesting with all the high-risk events on the table this week.
I want to ask you about the personality of Donald Trump. He's been criticized for, you know, using a kind of personal attacks, and he attacked Justin Trudeau. Is this difficult for a market analyst that he's such a volatile character? You can't just, rely on reason and, you know, even national interest to plot where countries are going to go in terms of their policies?
Well, you know, I've been following the president for a while now, and there's one thing that I know for sure is that the president's uncontrollable need to defend his status is more apparent than any of his strategy. So there's a lot of ego at risk here. You know, the president obviously views himself as a supreme negotiator, and this is sort of part and parcel to the way he carries himself. He's not a politician. I mean, we can't compare him on the same stage of these people that have grown up in the political stages. This guy's a businessman. He takes this as a more aggressive tack. He actually takes these negotiations very personally. And I think this is, you know, he tends to leave his emotions on his sleeve. And you know, a lot of times he belts out without really thinking. But this is just part of the nature that he hasn't really grown up in the political landscape. So, you know, we've seen him come across extremely boisterous, right? But we've also seen him walk back some of the more boisterous elements of his policies. So, you know, we have to take everything with a grain of salt when dealing with Donald Trump.
Boisterous is a good word, Stephen. But since we're talking about Donald Trump, there's a deadline that the White House has to finalize tariffs on Chinese goods set for this Friday. And trade concerns could still very much weigh on markets throughout the week. So how much do you think the yuan will be in play over the coming week, Stephen?
Well, it's pretty interesting. And I think we've seen the PBOC actually keep the yuan in a fairly relatively tight band relative to the strength and weakness of the U.S. dollar. So it's really trading very sensitive to a global basket, as opposed to, you know, there was some thought that the PBOC and the Chinese and mainland administrators could let the yuan weaken off quite considerably. But it seems to be holding in a relatively tight band, and we have seen it appreciate after it did have a relative meltdown last week. So on that view, I don't think that's going to be used as a policy tool. I really think, you know, I've been looking at, again, this is another, you know, another narrative we've been looking at. It feels like it's one of these things that we wake up almost, it feels like a bad back every morning we wake up with. And as the day wears on, it tends to get a little bit less, only we wake up the next day and there's another headline that we have to deal with. But ultimately, I think there's a cure for this backache. I think China has been offering olive branches. They've been offering concessions. They've been making this this very, very friendly and keeping the dialogue open. And whilst both parties remain at the table, I'm actually quite, I actually think we're going to have some consensus here. So, you know, I'm still thinking that before this trade war impact starts to weigh negatively on the global growth impact, I think there's going to be a melding of minds.
Hey, Stephen, let's move away from geopolitics and global trade and let's talk monetary policy. Look, the Fed's rate decision that's due this week, that appears to be well telegraphed. But then after that, we've got the ECB, their monetary policy decision expected later on Thursday. How are expectations shaping up on that front?
Well, as you mentioned, that you know, the Feds, we believe they're going to obviously have the rate hike. I guess the big question is whether it comes down to a dovish or hawkish rate hike. I don't think the Feds are going to change their path. I think, obviously, they want to keep raising rates because the U.S. economy is doing quite well, and there's this outlier fear that inflation will tick up. But we started to see some wage pressure in the last employment number. We've also seen retail sales point up quite considerably in the U.S. So there is some concern that they may come off a little bit more hawkish. My view is that's quite unlikely. The ECB, on the other hand, up until last week's well-orchestrated forward guidance around QE, the fact that they could possibly discuss removing a degree of a quantity, QE this week, I think by them stepping in front of this ahead of the meeting, I think they've announced their intentions. So what I've looked now is that the bar is pretty high for any policy surprises. So I think what the market's going to look at here is if they see anything in addition to the QE that they announced last week. However, I think this is very unlikely because also the ECB doesn't want to send the euro raging higher at this particular time when there's a lot of political risk in Europe and there's still a lot of uncertainty about the economic recovery. I think they want to keep the euro in somewhat of a neutral level.
So that's the Fed and the ECB. Well, what about the Bank of Japan and the announcement on Friday? Are you watching? What are you watching out for that?
I consider that's going to be the snooze fest of the week. We don't believe there's going to be any policy change whatsoever. And, you know, I think right now the Bank of Japan is just sitting back waiting. I think, obviously, when I was talking about regional risk from the Trump-Kim summit, I think, you know, obviously Japan is one of the big beneficiaries here for this to go smooth. So I think Japan's more focused on the regional perspective and how this is going to weigh out as opposed to what the other central banks are doing. I don't think they really care that the ECB is moving to a higher interest rate. I don't think they really care that much if the Fed's moves up. They're really concerned as they just don't want the yen to strengthen. So they're going to be very reluctant to change their current dovish narrative because, again, you know, their economy has absolutely zero inflation. So there's absolutely no need for them to move the needle at this stage.
Stephen, I'm glad we're talking about Japan because you've got Tun Dr. Mahathir, the Malaysian Prime Minister, in Japan right now with a pretty packed itinerary, and I believe he's going to meet the BOJ governor as well. So, look, given the low-cost capital or low-cost capital that we're seeing in Japan right now, you know, do you think that could bode well in terms of their push for more yields or more returns outside of Japan, which is what we think Tun Dr. Mahathir is trying to accomplish?
Well, you know, certainly going to Japan is certainly a great move, you know, for Malaysia to look for some investment. I think they don't want to be seen just as relying on China flow, although the Chinese flow is going to be quite significant. Although there are a few hiccups with the Belt and Road Initiative right now, but I think, you know, that's basically because I think China is currently trying to get their own house organized, you know, around trade and around the internal economy. There's a little bit of uncertainty, so they're fine-tuning their economy. So I think there's been a little bit less focus on external. However, You know, what's favorable in this is that, you know, changing, getting competition between investors is also very good for Malaysia, in the sense if they can attract more Japanese money into the capital markets, that'll be very positive. Japanese are just massive investors globally. It's just the you know, all the way from the mom and pop retailers, all the way to the top end insurance companies. If you can appeal to any of these type of institutions to move funds into Malaysia, this will be a big win for the Malaysian government, and it'll look very good on the international capital markets. So I think this is a good positive direction.
Thank you so much, Stephen. I hope you get that selfie with Howard X or the Kim Jong-un impersonator. That was Stephen Innes, Head of Trading in Asia-Pacific at Awanda in Singapore. We'll be back with more business news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.